This is Philosophy versus Improv, where two sages try to teach each other a thing or two, and maybe you, the audience, get something out of it as well.
My name is Mark Linsenmeyer, representing the philosopher's position today.
And I am Mary Hines, and I am representing the improvisational position today on Philosophy versus Improv.
Do you think that the gravitas of one's voice gives one more an authoritative stance?
Well, as a matter of fact, I was just teaching a lesson yesterday. I'm teaching two different classes with Second City this term, Improv 1 and Improv 2. And Improv 2 was all about characters. And characters are my favorite. And we explored the nuance of status, high status and low status, which is really interesting because everyone has different interpretations tropically. Like, you know, the question I asked them is, what sensory information do you intake that gives you the information to discern status? And we determined, I mean, I like to frame when I'm teaching, I already know the answer to the question, but I like to ask them, like, what do you think? Like, and it adds more to how I teach it, and I'm always learning in the moment. So the answer, that is a long way to say yes.
Well, thank you, Herr Professor.
I do have a student debt, but I don't have a doctorate student debt.
So I mentioned that just one of my favorite philosophy professor in undergrad, who I resolved, you know, was a very old guy and, you know, seemed like a very high status individual. And he had come from Germany. I think his family was involved in the Holocaust, fleeing the Holocaust, stuff like that. Mm. And he was a little critical of less like, yes, in Germany, you would just say Herr Professor or whatever. But in America, we don't believe in status. So instead of just putting it in the title and making it formal like that, it just shows up in every little groveling thing that the juniors would say. So it might, ironically, if you formalize status, make you free to not have to worry about it so much. And I'm not sure if this is really true, but this was his experience.
The German language is very fascinating. So my family were Austrian and Irish on mom and dad's side, respectively. And I have a strong relationship with my family that lives in Pechtoldsdorf, which is a town southwest of Vienna. And I got a German immersion when I went over there, and then I studied German in school. And I always had a difficult time with it because they have very specific, not only words that you use, but how you conjugate the words depending on status. And they're very, like, even how you greet someone in a store, it's very dogmatic. And I guess English has that too, right? Like a sir or a ma'am, or like, how do we modify our language when we are communicating with an elder or someone of a higher status?
Well, first and last name is the obvious thing. And so when I became a professional and was given the advice that, like, look, you're all professionals, so it doesn't matter if the person I'm communicating with is some sort of senior professor or whatever, just call them Bob, call them Lucy, whatever, because that's what we're doing here.
I feel like that requires permission to be able to be casual, though, right? Like, may I call you by your first name?
It's not casual. It's in emails, in particular. Facing somebody face-to-face, I think there's more of a question of, like, how do I... Yeah, you kind of want to establish. But if you're just... You don't... Here, before I send you my first email, let me ask you what you prefer. I mean, maybe the...
Sure.
I have, you know, said, dear doctor, whatever... And then they respond with their first name, and then, like, that's the permission.
And then they let you know. Yeah. I always stay on the side of formal out of courtesy. And then once it's established, oh, call me Bob, then great. Sure. I can still honor your expertise and call you by your first name.
Yeah. So I find it weird the cases where, so we got an inquiry from somebody who wanted to be on the podcast, but it was from this person's assistant who was referring to them. You know, it's like some documentary filmmaker as Mr. So-and-so.
Cool.
Like, oh, if you want to talk to Mr. So-and-so, you know. And then when he left me a message on my voicemail, he just, you know, identified himself by his first name. But clearly that was the dynamic they had set up and how she was going to present him as this very important person. And I'm very suspicious I mean, this sort of just gets on the general issue of who do you, you know, in what circumstances do you regard as presenting authoritative advice at all, right? And status is supposed to be short for that, right? If you're a professor of such and such, then okay. If you're right. a doctor such and such, then I can listen to you. If you're just somebody with opinions about health or about...
Yeah, your hierarchy, you get notched down a little bit on the hierarchy ladder. I don't know. I always stay on the side of being proper over informal. That's just me. That's great. Everyone has different operating systems and different programming and, like, you know, so to each their own, just as long as you're not an asshole.
But on this podcast, you have not called the professors by their last names, professor, you know, blah, blah, blah. Maybe you're just following my lead.
I think that might be it. Yeah, it's funny. Interesting. It's interesting that you say that. I had not thought about that at all. That's an interesting thing to point out.
I almost feel like calling somebody Mr. or Miss. Miss, okay, we got to separate out the gender thing because Miss versus Mrs. versus Ms. or whatever, that's its own pile of bullshit. But assuming that the male, calling someone like...
I don't know if I agree with you of it being a pile of bullshit. Well, I feel like it's important.
Let's get to it in a second. But yeah. Calling somebody that who is your peer or by Mr., that almost seems, or especially like a kid, you know, if you call, hey, if I call my nephew, hey there, Mr. Casey or whatever, like clearly I'm making a joke. I'm doing something, you know, so that you can establish. And that was in some classes I've been in, like I took karate and we were all called by our last names, like we're in the military or something like that. Mr. And it was neither jokey nor was it formal. So I'm unclear what the, I feel like, you know, that this is something that has been around us long enough, this status thing, and that we are Americans are simply uncomfortable with. And so it invites playing with it.
Sure.
So my exception with this professor thing is I find a lot more female academics will identify themselves as professor, blah, blah, blah. And they could be a 25-year-old. And I might be slightly more inclined to go along with that initially because I feel like they're more likely to be, like, the reason they're doing that is because they're reacting to being routinely disrespected. And so they're using, they actually need the credential to say whatever default gravitas you might give to some random man, you're not going to give to me. So I'm going to demand respect by using this.
Sure.
All right. So, but what is the, like, yeah, the fact that you have what I was considering bullshit about it is I think that the whole idea with Ms. is that why is it important when you meet somebody and you want to address them with respect that you know whether they're married or not? Like, that's the right. bullshit outdated thing. Yes.
Great. Okay, cool. I agree with you on that. Yeah, I think that's irrelevant whether they are married or not. And I think it's none of anyone's business, but that's like older programming that mm-hmm. is still programmed into the system. That code didn't get updated.
Yes. Well, and worse is when my mother would send us a letter, some official letter, and it might even be just to my wife, and it would be to, like, Mrs. Mark.
Like, Mrs. Mark,
why are you doing that?
Yeah,
because that's
are
what
doing
they did.
That?
That's what they did in the past. But that is a tradition that should be well dead by now.
Yeah, Mrs. Mark, excuse me, I am my own sovereign person. Thank you very much. That's funny.
Yeah, I think I was pretty clear on our last episode together. I do want to talk about you and Jenny because I got to listen to most of that.
We had so much fun. We were like chickens in the hen house. We had a blast.
I feel like there have been a couple episodes this season where I felt like I'm trying to expose, not really, but at least give thought about what could just be snake oil in the realm of
sure. philosophy. I get that theme. I can see that theme.
In whatever. I feel like that is a valuable thing. You know, you run the risk of if you're interviewing somebody, does that mean you're advocating what they're saying? I mean, clearly not, but that's kind of the default. Like if we had somebody that had really offensive
political views, unless we were just explicitly like, we're doing a debate with you about your offensive political views. If it's just something let's just investigate this. Let's see.
Yeah.
So that was, I feel like we tread the line well in this book of aphorisms, which clearly, you know, is not a philosophy book in the traditional sense, but there's a lot of history of aphorisms and you should just judge it on its own merits. But there was, as sort of experienced in many places as that author was, you know, he didn't have the credential. And even if he did, like there are plenty of philosophy professor at a small university or whatever that might write something that would not be regarded as the mainstream of philosophy as real philosophy in some way. So it's not just a credential.
What is the definition then of real philosophy?
Just if it's well argued, if it is shows cognizance of the relevant literature. So a lot of young people discovering philosophy discover Ayn Rand. But Ayn Rand is clearly just somebody who, she took a couple classes and she didn't like what she heard. And so she's very vociferous about how bad Immanuel Kant is, when clearly she did not understand Kant well at all. Like she's operating with a sheer, like, I took a freshman course in which Kant was one of the 12 figures covered, and now I'm going to write a whole book that is in large part a condemnation of the, and it just, that's why it's bad philosophy. There's you might even like some of the positive ideas she put forward, but because they are not well argued and do not participate in their tradition, which she is trying to touch on, she is like name dropping this person. So you should at least do a good job with that. But of course, there's always, you know, how much of an expert do you have to be qualified, you know, with the amount of Kant that I've read? I'm not a professor of Kant. Am I allowed to write something that is critical of that? Like, it just, it sort of ends up being peer reviewed. So it's a little club of people. And what's philosophy is what that little club considers philosophy. That's kind of what it comes
out to. I wonder, I'm phrasing this as a statement, but it's a question. So in the purpose of theater is to cause your audiences to think and feel and leave the space different than when they came in, having conversations, being mad, being sad, being happy, etc. So I wonder, is that the same purpose of philosophy, to get people to think and feel and get mad and be like, cause them to do their own research, etc.?
Yeah, I think that is the primary thing. And it's only because you have, right, you would hope that in a theater, I mean, this is a sort of separate issue, that to what extent, when you see a movie, when you hear a song, when you see an improv performance, do you have to have experienced other things in the genre to appreciate it?
So my musing, where I'm going here is, then I wonder, is there such thing as bad theater or bad philosophy if the purpose of both is to make you think, feel, reflect, have conversations, do research, make change?
Well, certainly if it is like Ayn Rand, single-mindedly trying to convince you of this thing, and that, you know, if it succeeds, you just go out as an acolyte of that thing, I kind of regard that as bad philosophy. But because that doesn't encourage you to do your own research. In fact, it's saying all these philosophers that are saying different things than I'm saying, they were just so full of shit to start with. They're just such bad people that you, right? So this is kind of what the bad kind of dogmatic religion.
Yeah.
Like, okay. Hey, yeah, thank you pay attention to those liberal theologians, because they are the Antichrist. They're dressing. I'm thinking of this Tallarico thing that I've been reading a lot in, you know, on Twitter and such.
I'm not familiar.
Oh, just that the Texas Senate candidate, the Democrat that just won the primary, is super Christian, but he's liberal Christian. And so you might think that all these Christian people would be just like, gosh, having a Christian, I would sure like to vote for a Christian. But now there's, he thinks that all gods are, you know, all religions are shooting at the same thing, that we're all kind of on this world together. And real Christianity is, you shall put no God before me. I am the one true. There's no way except through Jesus. And so you're right. An apostate. You're a heretic if you're preaching open-mindedness.
Such bullshit.
That's something that's philosophical. Right. So a religious person who's talking dogmatically like that is talking about the very important things. It's the salvation of your soul and your health on earth and you're living a good life, but is not encouraging you. Well, it's encouraging you to do research, encouraging you to read the Bible. It's encouraging you to do certain research, but not what you mean, I think.
Hmm. Fucking bullshit. All of it.
Right, Bible study. You're being invited to study. And it's a big book. And there's a lot of people that have talked about it over the years. You can have your whole life easily taken up with being a scholar or even just a lay scholar of this Bible. But is that doing research?
Is that doing research?
In the sense that you meant.
If you're, oh.
Right? I want this piece of theater to encourage you to have tough conversations and do your own research. Right? Do your own research.
I think reading the Bible counts as research.
Doing your own research is what the conspiracy theorists say. This is so ironic that like it, I want you to believe this bunch of bullshit that has probably been originally created by Russian propagandists. And if you do your own research, which means you go and watch all the YouTube videos by other people that are infected by the cult, that's doing your research.
Right. Sure. The question becomes, what is the quality of the source you are researching from? Mm-hmm.
So there you go. What counts as good philosophy? What is the quality of the source of the research? Like,
aha, we got there. We did it. Good job, everyone.
So what is their equivalent? So I kind of, my daughter, when she was younger, she really liked on YouTube something called Studio C. Are you aware of this troupe?
Maybe. Tell me more.
So they're sort of like a Saturday Night Live thing. I think they're vaguely Christian in some way. It's not overt, but it's definitely clean and it's like kid friendly. And I was like, the only reason you like this is because you've never watched Saturday Night Live or all the other things that I have.
You don't have a basis for comparison.
Yes. Yeah. So, what is bad theater? What is bad philosophy? Well, in one case, like, well, if it makes you laugh, I guess it was good. If it makes you, if it meets you where you're at, if you are a 14-year-old girl and you're seeing this thing, like, that might be perfect for you. But does it make it?
I think that's my point. I mean, bad or good is relative, right? Sure. So I feel like as long as it's causing you to think and not just sink deeper into the matrix, then it qualifies in air quotes as good, I believe. If it makes you think and have conversations and try to be a better human.
So in listening to, it was really fun to hear just you and Jenny and what you would do with the format. I think Jenny was being mostly receptive, just like she was being a guest. So it's not really a test of if Jenny is coming in full bore, I've got a philosophy thing to teach Mary. I haven't seen that test yet.
Yeah, I think she was coming in more with like, hey, I'm showing up and let's see what we talk about and see what makes itself available. Yeah.
But what you guys did talk about a lot was the struggle, right? We're tall poppies in a, in a cut the tall poppies world. And and so that got me thinking, in literature, in theater, in philosophy, with the connection between suffering, which is individual, right? It's individuals who are suffering.
Right.
And philosophy, does that count as philosophy? Before I try to clarify.
Oh, I don't have anything to add on that, really. I mean, I've got some thoughts that are simmering, but.
Yeah, well, throw one. I mean, so the two options are, yes, in fact, suffering, the struggle are absolutely central to why you would want to do philosophy. And so, of course, focusing what would make a good literary work that would be a philosophical literary work could be a particularly keen, insightful take on what the struggles are. And this reveals the struggles of all humanity. Or you could say, well, no, philosophy is sort of a descriptive enterprise. So it involves.
Is it a starship enterprise?
It involves ethics.
Thanks for that laugh. And I appreciate it.
I think this is let's have a scene about this in a second. But yes,
Starship Enterprise.
You could argue that the suffering of the individual, in fact, could turn into what they call suffering porn, which actually puts you deeper into the matrix, right? If you are a sort of intellectual who when you read a work of literature are just looking for the places in which it's racist or sexist. To me, that is sort of the epitome of a bad trend in what people might consider philosophy, because you're not actually seeing.
Yeah, you're putting blinders on yourself. Yeah. You've already clicked on a filter of this is going to be bad. I'm going to sniff out what's bad about it, which blinds you to being open to any ahas or the revelations. I love the moments when I'm reading and I call it like a book down moment, where you like put it down on your lap or you put your hand in your page and you close it and you just have a moment to go, I find those, it takes me a long time to read in general, because I love reflecting and then, you know, going down a rabbit hole of like my own reflections and making notes and musing off of the material. So I feel like that's a really sad thing when you put those blinders on and you're only looking for something, you're only looking for fault, and then you leave yourself out of the gifts that are, could be available to you.
And what is a gift that could be some personal, you know, oh, this applies in some way. Yeah.
Yeah. A gift like reading something that you, coming across something that you weren't expecting to affect you as it did. And so taking a pause to be like, oh, that made me think, that made me feel, that made me mad, that made me sad, that brought me to, you know, in the line of improvisation, if this is true, then what else is true? And applying it to my own life and how I relate to it. I feel like that's the fun of reading any kind of like, it's funny, I think of philosophy, I think of philosophy as kind of as like a self-help text, right? Like something to expand your mindset. So I think of that for any kind of educational literature.
Well, you know, this is supposed to be an immersive Star Trek Enterprise experience.
Oh yeah, I have my, I brought my own uniform. I hope
yeah,
that's okay.
Yeah. So what sort of a crew member paradigm type did you choose?
Oh, I chose Riker's love interest. I chose the part alien, part human doctor. And the most important thing is that I'm really hot. Just like, have I got my hair done? I got my hair and makeup done because I wanted to be a really hot alien doctor.
I mean, there's a lot of fantasy potential with that.
I didn't go with the ears because that felt like too much of a trope. Like, I'm not going Vulcan, you know, like any kind of basic bitch can go Vulcan. But I'm, you know, so I'm pretty proud of myself for that. As much as I wanted the pointy ears.
Okay, so it sounds like you were opting for the level, the full Fantasy Island level of immersion.
That sounds great. Involves, is that included in the package or does it cost extra?
For women, it does not cost anything extra because a lot more men want to be doing the sex in as part of the package, as it sounds like you've put forward.
I didn't know sex was an option. I was just going for being sexy. I wasn't going for sex.
No,
I was
by the Fantasy Island thing, you know, like every episode of Fantasy Island, if you remember that show, it was just like, how many people do you want to have sex with? And then they would just set them up. It was really just a brothel.
That's why I picked the Enterprise experience instead of the island experience.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So this is not, this is the PG being sexy and flirty. So, all right. So that, that also does not cost anything extra. And
oh, that's so great.
I got to be honest, like the Bob, fellows who sign up for the full contact fantasy, like you don't want to be near those.
Yeah, no. Yeah. I enjoy my nerds, but I prefer a hot nerd, you know?
Yeah. One of my first times doing this, I signed up for the, that when Spock gets stoned and goes down to that planet where he's just like, ooh, Kirk, enjoy the grapes. Ooh. And that, I mean, that was a fun week, but, you know, it took a while to recover from that. And what package
did you sign up for in the immersive Enterprise experience?
So this time I'm being more like the hologram. Also the doctor.
So I was thinking holodeck, right? Because I liked how like the doctor one included holodeck access.
Yes.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they didn't show you so much in the show how because he was a hologram, he spent a lot of time in the holodeck. He doesn't have to dream or whatever.
But he's just so what you see him doctoring is just like, that's why he looks so pissed off when you call him to do some doctoring, because he's been off having the full contact hologram Fantasy Island experience. So he resents you and your medical your
full contact Fantasy Island hologram experience. I just wanted to repeat it back.
I mean,
I love that, like, I was imagining us. I feel like the scene. I feel like we've gotten to the end of this scene for now, or it's evolving. I feel like this was like you and I sitting in the lobby, waiting to get on the ride, so to speak, like waiting to get in there.
Yes, I wasn't sure when I started if I was like an administrator of this place helping you orient, but I wasn't. It didn't matter.
And then we figured it out along the way. Yeah. I was seeing you as like an administrator kind of position. So we didn't like invoke that. We didn't like ground that's what it is. But I think we were both surrendering to the unspoken shared reality. And then as it went along, I was seeing in my head that we were sitting in some kind of really cool, spacey kind of lobby. And like, I was just met you and was like chatting with you. And you also paid for, you know, we're both here for the same thing. So we're like, hey, what are you doing? Hey, what are you here for? We're just like really friendly nerds.
So if you're an administrator, you would indicate that by gravitas, to return to the, I'm an authority
to
figure.
Show
I wasn't giving you authority.
Yes. No, you were giving conversational, available. So then I was matching your energy, which is a great thing to do for status.
Where does status fit in economic transactions? Economic transactions are supposed to be two-sided. And this is one of the things that shows that capitalism is silly, you know, or at least it has issues. Let's just say that, like, when you work for an employer, this should just be, it's at will. It's you know, I want to make some money out of my spare time. I have lots of options. Hey, maybe you can make use of my expertise. So you should respect me as much as I then respect you, the boss who is setting me up with these opportunities. And there are plenty of things where you do get treated 100%. Like that, like where you're an actor. Well, I don't know. You tell me. And you're getting gigs. But it seems like they you're the talent. So they respect you. Whereas the ordinary worker, like, no, don't fire me, please. Yes, sir. You're my boss.
Right. I endeavor for mutual respect and honoring everyone that I transact with. Even if they are in a service position, I do my very best to not treat anyone lower or lesser than, because that is my biggest pet peeve, is when people talk down or dismissively and make assumptions about my intelligence and that drives me bonkers. So I do my very best to not do that and to be a good person and to treat everyone with respect. And like treat them as equals.
Although you're sort of like in a restaurant, in a server environment, I mean, you can give them a good tip and you can not be obnoxious and demanding and, you know, you can do that kind of stuff. But
yeah,
there's still you're inherently in a situation. Yeah, I guess it's part of sort of the Minnesota nice or Midwest. Where
just because someone is serving me something does not mean they are a servant. Right. Just because someone is driving me does not mean that they are like, I get to like treat them like shit, but like, they're just trying to make money and be happy. Like, so yeah.
But if you feel too much like that, they just don't care about what they're doing, then okay, we have tipping as a way. So in other words, I'll be really polite to them. I know your service was so slow. I know you were kind of rude and forgetful, but I'll still be super polite to you. But then terrible tip. Like, I might write on, I can't believe it took 2 hours to, you know, we had to sit in this restaurant for 2 hours.
I see how that might be something one would do. But after having spent so many years in the service industry, even if someone is terrible, and I guess there's probably a boundary, like there's like if they throw food on me or if there's something that's really just like ghastly, I don't believe in the punishment tip, because you never know what someone's day is. You never know what's going on in the kitchen. Like, you never know what they're going through. So I do not engage in what I call the punishment tip. I see how someone would, but I don't.
I did that once. Let's say I wrote the thing. It's more of an issue. I feel like they're, you know, because tipping is expanding, right? You understand if you're at a restaurant and they're serving you for half an hour and they're refilling your drink, like,
Okay. You understand what the deal with that is. If they never refill your drink once and you were really thirsty and it was empty the whole time, like, okay, that's a thing that might.
Then they get you the minimum. You get the minimum acceptable version of that. Yeah.
Yes, what's so 15% level is the minimum and 20 is normal and a little above that, you know?
Yeah.
But the, when you're checking out at a Subway or something like that, I don't know. Do you even feel it all invites you to tip? You know, these people are working for terrible wages. You really should throw a couple of bucks on top of it. But certainly the suggested 20% or whatever, like, no, I'm not going to do that for my. But you, yeah, normally you handing in those, me a water from the bin. Yeah,
normally in those atmospheres where it's like counter service kind of thing, uh-huh. Sometimes I do 10%. I think of it in terms of like where I am at financially. And if I were to tip, like 20% for me is like, it's beyond my means. And I'm like, I think of it as like doing like 10%, or if I don't tip, I make sure that I'm really joyful and kind and pleasant. And I don't leave an imprint that has like a negative taste. I make sure that the interaction is positive and kind and patient, which I know that's not money, but that is a form of abundance so that the person on the other end of the counter doesn't have to deal with a bitch. Like me being like pleasant and being like, oh, like, I love what you did with your eye makeup. It looks really good. And I'm being genuine and authentic. So like leaving a positive imprint as opposed to being cunty. I love that word. I like using it where I can. I love your face when I said it.
It's all good. Yeah, so just these differences of status that seem built into transactions, which I feel like the person who is trying to sell you a washer dryer or whatever is going to be very solicitous. Oh, sir, because you know they're working on commission. They're trying to make the sale. The waiter is probably doing that too, trying to maximize the tip. I just feel like when you're getting that level of status, that it's got to be some kind of trick. Like it. That capitalism is basically predatory and the people selling you stuff.
Oh, hold on. We need to repeat that. Capitalism is predatory. I've actually been working for the last 2 months to bring my internet bill down. So I've been with Spectrum for 3 years. It started at $40. It ballooned to $96.25. I called one time and also just the process of getting to the right person to help me was like at one point I was yelling into my phone, retention department. And it was like, in order to connect you to the appropriate. And it just kept going through this same thing multiple times, I guess, to try to infuriate me or like get me out of there. And then I just went on a stream that was like, connect me to a person, connect me to a human, connect me to an agent. And I just kept saying every other way to think to connect to a person. Finally did. And I was pretty polite. I was like, can you help me out here? Can you explain to me, like, why did this happen? I was like, it went from $40 to $96.25 and I'm a 3-year loyal customer. What can we do? And he was like, I can't do anything. And then the conversation went on and I was getting more like aggravated. And I was like, so you are in a position of customer service and what you're telling me is you are not able to provide any kind of service. And he was like, well, you know, like we're a corporation. And I was like, okay, well, this has been a remarkable waste of my time and I am done wasting mine and yours. Thank you. Goodbye. So this saga went on. We got a backup internet. I was like ready to break up with them. I called them and I negotiated it down to like $31.25. And they sent a new modem and like added different stuff onto it. And then that didn't go through because the guy didn't process it right. So I had to call back again. And it was like, absolutely infuriating how much I had to fight to. And then with each conversation, the representative asked me at least 4 times, are you interested in signing in for Hermana? Are you ready? You could add Hermana. And each time, because I know that they have to, each time they asked, I was like, no, thank you. I'm not interested. And then they pitched another thing. And I was like, I know you have to ask me, but no, thank you. So even then I was just trying to, because they're just doing their job. Like they don't deserve a bitch, which me, they don't deserve me being a bitch. Like they have, and I even said this on one of the conversations, I was like, I understand that you have a script that you need to follow and you can go through it as much as you need to. But the moral of the story is I'm not interested in adding on any additional services at this time. Thank you so much.
So I want to take this as a case study in what are the gifts and to what extent are those gifts philosophical that, you know, I think it's a good tip of, yeah, everybody's in a struggle. You know, they're parts of systems. You don't want to unload on them. This is definitely a good thing people learn. But something where I threw out that gross generalization of capitalism being predatory, that's something that a philosopher will like, what does that really mean?
What does that really mean? I love that. I think that's a very interesting thing to expound upon.
To chew on, because it, you know, in some respects it is, and in some respects it isn't. Exchange should be, in the abstract, something where, well, nobody is entirely happy, right? Isn't that the way they say that a good deal, a deal?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, because you're giving up something to get something else. And
I'm sure
ideally,
they would have loved for me to continue to pay $96. Yes, but I was like, I'm not paying. I'm going to break up with you if you are asking me to pay this exorbitant amount of money.
Yes. But the fact that, yeah, and part of that is, as you said, as a corporation, that it's not a one-on-one exchange, which if you were doing that, like even an employer-employee thing, like, okay, you might have multiple employees, but it's still, you are the employer in that situation. You know, there's some sort of, to what extent are there standards of fairness? I mean, capitalism, again, in the abstract, right, that's the miracle of prices, the miracle of having to compete, is that if you had a properly competitive market, then they could not treat you that way because you would have three other options to get your internet from. And it's only because there are these monopolies or practical monopolies.
And internet is such a monopoly.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that's not wild. So in other words, there's nothing wrong with capitalism there. It is about this implementation, this broken implementation of capitalism. So
they can gouge because there was only like one other option.
Yep.
Yeah.
Or, you know, as much as we would like, as I would like, you know, the government to just take care of some of these things so you don't have to rely on market forces. Well, that's the ultimate monopoly. If you had to get everything, you know, probably government healthcare would be much better. But like, well, then if you didn't, what's the alternative? If you're getting shitty care, like it just would require, because it's government, they would have some appeals process. They were actually have to pay attention to you, whereas a company just doesn't. It's only a matter of keeping your business.
Barf. That's what I say. Barf. That's a big old barf.
All right. Was there another scene we can do based on the status and...
I'm sure there is. There was something I wrote down, the struggle club, and I don't really know what to do with it, but I wrote down the struggle club.
So we see, authoritative voice, that you, as one of those people who has been writing things on the internet, hostile to the regime, we call you the struggle club, that you are all consumed with your own struggles, and so you've been brought here to the re-education camp, young Miss Petunia. You're unmarried.
I am so very excited to be on the struggle campus. I have been wanting to be invited to the struggle campus for a long time. And I think that I have shown that I have struggled enough that I deserve to be on the campus today. Thank you so much, Herr Winston.
I mean, this was supposed to be a matter of taking some young, unsatisfied person and training them.
Oh, that is me. I am very young and I'm very unsatisfied.
I mean, just you're speaking with quite a lot of gravitas. And so I just wonder.
Is it too much?
I just wonder if I should, in fact, perhaps be learning from you. I assumed that I would be able to convert you to a happy way of life and to be satisfied with the regime's repressive measures. But you seem to come in with such a positive attitude.
Honestly, thank you so much for noticing. It has taken me a long time to be comfortable being miserable. You know, I am so happy to be unhappy. it is a paradox that I am working out right now, but I take so much delight in being miserable.
I feel like you could be, if you work hard, that you could be some sort of teacher here on the campus, because you really...
Oh, you really think so?
That is the secret.
This is a secret.
Also, having an accent that goes between various nationalities, willy-nilly,
of course,
that is also something that we work on.
It is because I am so unhappy with who I am that I can be and want to be anyone else other than myself.
Oh, you are coming right from the right direction that we encourage in the peoples, because really, it is not fun to be in a repressive regime. So the best you could do is to just keep it down a bit.
Keep it down a bit?
Yes, keep it. Maybe don't complain. Don't post publicly so much, or else, you know, you might have to be flogged. But the attitude...
Oh, I would love a flogging.
Oh.
Oh, my God.
Have you signed up for the full context flogging experience?
I did not see that there was a sign up for the flogging experience. I saw there was a sign up for... so you can choose that your food is all cold... and stale and moldy and has no nutritional value. And I saw that sign up and I said, absolutely, make all of my food cold garbage. But I did not know that you could sign up for flogging.
Yes, we call it the Choose Your Own Adventure in the Struggle Club. That you know, when you... Hey,
oh my God,
like
this is paradise
to have
for me.
A cold worm, then turn to page 26. I could get you some of the manuals.
Oh my God, I don't think that I deserve to have access to so much torment, to be honest with you.
I thought
that you, as you know, the director, the camp, Herr Winston, would try to change me. But now I see the light that I can become even more miserable. What a gift. Let me give you a 25% tip. Can you go to the screen
so I can give you a
25% tip? And listen, I would like to give you 5 stars as well. I'm going to go onto the Google and I'm going to give you 5 stars because honestly, this is unglaublich to me.
I mean, most people who work in sort of a concentration camp, they get very low tips. Oh. They it's more 5%, 10% maximum.
You lost me at concentration camp. I'm so sorry. I'm going to take my misery.
That's a boundary.
We found one. You said concentration camp, and everything got so tight. I was like, no.
Isn't it a re-education camp? Isn't that basically the same thing? That's what I was.
I don't think so. I don't know. Either way, anyway, you said concentration camp, and I went hoop 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 hoop. Pull up.
I mean, it's just where you go to concentrate, right? It's just a... that's one of those terms that probably had a wider use.
Problematic language.
Yes, that's been ruined.
Well, it's the same way I used to enjoy the word Trump, and I don't say it anymore.
Hmm.
Which is a bummer because it's such a beautiful word, but I don't want... I'm trying to detach myself as much as possible to any line of thinking that makes me think of...
of course.
Of that person. I refer to him as Tangerine Palpatine, and it brings me joy.
Schittler.
Well, thank you so much. I will give you 5 stars. Say it again.
Schittler, I feel like, was my favorite.
Oh, that's a good one, too. Yeah. But something about Tangerine Palpatine is really fun. It's really fun.
Yes.
And I imagine him all shrivelly and drooly and the evil coursing through him.
Hey, you should feel bad for Palpatine because he only got all that shriveled in a battle. And that's just like you're making fun of somebody who was a war veteran who's wounded.
This is the Star Trek experience. We're not the Star Wars package. That's actually like on another lot.
People just think that he was wounded in the battle
with Mace Windu with Samuel L. Jackson, but really he already looked like that, and it was just his illusion that got dispelled by that lightning.
Bob, you're ruining the Star Trek experience for me. I'm so sorry. Trek, not war.
I think Trek, not war is a good title for the episode.
It is. You're welcome. I had a lot of fun, and I feel like the last scene we did was a great example of bad improv. But we were just having fun. So I'm curious to hear it later. But I just kept saying yes to anything Mary would have said no to.
I feel like everybody falls into, you know, if you just have to start in innumerably many scenes. And this is why we should get guests to start them whenever we can. Because I think we found out that one of your defaults is the something store. You know,
because I feel like the reason I do that is because I feel like it's more, there's something that is easier and more attainable to people who are non-improvisers.
Sure.
Like there's something about that overlay. Because
it's a metaphor right there. Yeah.
And so I end up going to that as a go-to, because I know we've talked about this before. It's very important to me that I protect our guests, and we're asking them to do something that's, for some people, is very challenging and very scary. So it's very important for me to protect our guests.
And Bill's was always, we're having a business meeting about something or other. That was his default.
That was his go-to. I do meetings. I call meetings pretty frequently, I think.
My go-to is probably two exes talking to each other. We're two snakes. We're two turkeys. And that sort of just gives you a line of what would those turkeys talk about? Would they talk about being afraid about Thanksgiving? Would they talk, you know, this kind of thing?
That yeah. Just something. Interesting.
Whereas if you just do a nothing, right? If you just, we're just at a table at a restaurant together, then you know, you just have to come up with something. There's nothing built into the premise.
I think for people who are non-improvisers, that could be really scary, mm-hmm. which is what's fascinating about improvisation is really it is play. I've been noticing in my students there is fear to be playful. It's like I feel like in my work, I've noticed that people have forgotten how to play, or they don't give themselves permission to. So much of the work is like me showing myself as the clown, so to speak, to make them feel comfortable and confident being goofy, like giving permission, like through my authority and my experience. And if I am a person of authority in the field and I am choosing to be joyful and playful, well then, oh great. Then I must be able to be playful as well. I being student or other person on the side of the conversation.
Well, I guess comparably, if I was, you know, being a philosophy tutor, I had a tutoring gig this week.
Oh, fun.
Then, you know, I always start with, what are you interested in? What are the questions that are bugging you?
Hell yeah. And what's the connection point? Where's the fire the hottest?
Yeah. And I can kind of point out, okay, based on what you're saying, maybe we should read this or talk about this or whatever. But it's always, you know, wherever you're starting, your struggles, your curiosities, those are valid. And
yeah,
I haven't tutored that many different kinds of people. I'm sure I could, if I did it a lot, I could get people that I really, you know, have been doing my own research, and I really want to talk about how the
YouTube videos and Instagram feeds,
the Uniparty has ruined everything and keeps us all as slaves. I would need to do a little work in how to steer such a person. Okay, there are things related to what you're talking about. Go read some Karl Marx to start with, and very smart people that read him, you know, but not right where you're starting. That's.
But I think you're doing an important service through your expertise in that way for someone who's like, I have seen XYZ in social media and videos and stuff. Please guide me to a reputable source where I can learn from the soil, from the roots of the tree, as opposed to the tips of the leaves. I feel like that's a really cool thing that you get to do.
Yeah. So I guess it's just right. It's
yeah.
I think there just might be a starker difference between philosophy as education
and sort of doing philosophy,
then
maybe, well, you tell me, improv is education versus doing improv. It seems like those are very similarly related things to you.
I feel like they're pretty similar. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's not a world away. And ideally, I'll kind of leave here with, so I had suggested this book by Martha Nussbaum, The Therapy of Desire, that could potentially be something
that
we could kind of use as a textbook. So she's a contemporary philosopher. She was on the Partially Examined Life as a guest at some point. First rate, thoroughly credentialed, as smart as you're going to get, but also, you know, writes with a very publicly accessible. She writes about animal welfare. She writes about anger. She writes about all these things. And so this particular book is sort of a secondary source about ancient Greek and Roman self-help traditions. Right?
Fascinating.
Skepticism, Aristotle on emotions, Stoicism, Cynicism. I don't remember what the other chapters are in there, but it seemed like something that would be easier to read for us so that we could have, like, let's just read a chapter. And not that we're going to, like, do the Partially Examined Life thing and tell everybody here's what all is in the chapter, but just see what gifts.
Let that source material, like a flick of the bic, right? Like, what fires can we start?
So we're getting at, you know, historical sources, but we're doing so through, you know, using this current authority who has an educational mindset, but ultimately it's just us still talking about stuff.
That sounds great. I'm into that. I'm sure our listeners would enjoy it as well. Also, hi, everyone. I hope you're having a good day.
And I did get another email from the person who was trying to get us to talk about the astrology book. And I just couldn't even get myself to say, you know what? Actually, we did it without your guest. We just did it on our own. Why don't you go listen to it and see if you like it? I mean, we did give them a little ad, so that was, you know, I don't feel bad about it, but I felt that was just this is what we're playing with in terms of authority, right? If we have somebody on the show, then they're the authority and you get to really talk freely with the authority right there, or are they just going to bring in their authoritativeness and keep you from being.
And I think it's different
free.
For everyone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a time and a place for everything. And this is the time.
Before we wrap up, I was wondering, where do I go for the 2 p.m. plug? Does it happen in the basement? Or does
maybe it happens.
Actually, you know, wait a second.
Only
I want
on
to
Patreon.
Put. Only on Patreon. I want to make a request. If I could be flogged out over in that field by that tree so I can get a little bit of sunshine while I'm also being punished for being a stupid human. I would love that. Thank you so much. I'll give you a good tip.
Bye, everybody.
Bye, everybody.
Thanks for listening to Philosophy vs. Improv. Check out our homepage, philosophyimprov.com. To support the effort and get an ad-free experience with our post-game discussions, support us at patreon.com/philosophyimprov. This podcast is a member of the Partially Examined Life family of podcasts. See partiallyexaminedlife.com. Maybe I should sell my soul. Bankrupt. Bankrupt. Bankrupt.